Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So then, sudden death in the penalty shootout, and Chris Swales just needs to score to keep Rotherham in the tie. And it's been saved by Graham Stack.
It's just one of them incidents that you never planned for it. And the game was still going on at the time. There was just a bit of a hush around the stadium. And then I've turned around and obviously the gates being open. And ended up being confronted by two fellas, one obviously slightly more intoxicated than the other, but both physically ready to sort of have a punch up, if you like. And it just so happened I've defended myself as best as I could. One of them's ended up on the floor and the other one's ended up sort of backpedaling.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of In Lockdown. Before we get to today's guest, just a reminder that if you are enjoying these shows so far, that we'd love to hear your feedback, so leave a rating and review. And remember to subscribe as well so that you won't miss any future episodes. Today we're in lockdown with Graham Stack. Graham was the understudy goalkeeper for the Invincible season, so he had a front row seat to Arsenal's greatest ever campaign. So Stacky, thanks for joining us, and how are you keeping at the moment without football?
I'm getting by, I'm managing, I must say. I've got four kids that keep me very busy, and a wife of mine that keeps giving me endless lids of jobs to do around the house, which is keeping me entertained and very busy. But no, I'm all good, I must say. The weather has helped. The kids have been brilliant.
So let's go back to the beginning then. You weren't always a goalkeeper growing up, were you? And you be playing a few positions outfield.
Yeah, it was quite strange, really. I mean, I played in various positions for my school, for my borough, for Surrey schools as a young lad. And where my family were publicans, we had a pub in Hounslow. And during the school holidays, it was become quite a challenge, really, for my parents to keep me in and around that environment and trying to keep me sort of stimulated and busy. And I didn't really have a love for goalkeeping at the time until I went on Bob Wilson's football camps, which were residential courses, you know, specifically for goalkeepers. And it was at the end of that Bob had contacted the club. So Bob spoke to Arsenal, and you know, at the end of the camp, I met David Seaman again, sort of one of my sort of sporting heroes growing up. He presented me with a signed shirt, which I still have to this day, and the certificates and the pictures as well. And it was Bob that actually contacted Arsenal, and Bob sort of said, "Look, we've got this young keeper here. Like, I really suggest we sort of take a closer look. He's, you know, got ability, and you know, he's a real good kid, and whatever else he said." And they said, "Okay, yeah, I think he spoke to Steve Rowley." He said, "Okay, we'll have a look at him. What's his name? Where does he live?" And he said, "Oh, his name's Graham Stack, and he's from Hounslow. He plays for, must have been Middlesex schools at the time." And he went, "That's funny." He went, "We've got a Graham Stack here, but he's been playing central midfield." So they went, no, that can't be right. That can't be right. So Steve then phoned my parents and said, "Look, has Stacky been on the goalkeeping course?" And they went, yeah, he's been there for the last 3-4 days. He went, where does he play? And my mum and dad were like, "Well, we're not too sure yet." And he said, "Well, I've just had a phone conversation with Bob." And Bob said, "He's a really good goalie." So Steve went, "Look, this is what we're going to have to do." So sort of moving forward, I trained at JVC, obviously at Highbury, and I would do a session in goal and I would do a session on pitch. And at the time, Pat, it was Ricey that was taking the youth team, and Geordie was taking an older group. And I would sort of, I was with Alex Welsh, who was probably one of my first goalkeeping coaches, who would take me in, and he was adamant I was going to be a goalie. And then you speak to someone like Pat Rice, and Pat Rice was adamant I was going to be a good player. But it sort of comes at a stage where I was playing, we used to play thirds. So I'd play a third in goal, a third on pitch, and I'd be sub for a third. And I remember my debut, I remember my first game. My first game was against West Ham, my second game was against Charlton. I played against Joe Cole. And I played in central midfield and scored. And I think in the last third I played in goal, I let in three or four. And had a bit of a shocker. And then the following week, I had a worldie in goal and had a nightmare on pitch. And rather than sort of turn and throw, and it was kind of a need to make a decision because it was probably unfair on me, and the club just probably needed to sort of realise where, you know, where I was going to play. And sort of sat down with mum and dad, and sort of, dad said, look, as much as you love playing out on pitch, Bob Wilson seems to think you're going to be, you know, a really, you know, cracking keeper. And I think we should take Bob's advice because Bob's a legend and Bob knows what he's talking about. And I kind of just went with it. And I was like, well, that's fine. Okay, you know, I'll be a goalie.
Were you always, because you're always a confident sort of bubbly character on the pitch, on off the pitch. Were you like that as a youngster as well? Were you naturally confident growing up?
Yeah, I've always been confident. I've always been very... very careful not to be ignorant or arrogant. I think they're very bad qualities to have. I think you can be confident, but be careful not to be super confident or too confident. But I think you have to be confident in your own ability, because I'm a big believer, if you don't believe in yourself, but you have to also back it up, which is key. But I remember one of my first training sessions with the Arsenal first team, and it was at London Colney. And my dad said to me, you know, when you get the opportunity, you've got to grab it with both hands. Don't change anything. You know, speak to players the way you would speak to your teammates. Don't be sort of overawed or you know, or scared. I thought, right, okay. So I remember training with Tony Adams, and we're playing a small-sided game, and I couldn't have been any older than 16. I must have been 16. I think I was an apprentice at the time. And we were playing a small-sided game, and I was going, Tony, left, right. Get tighter, Tony, get tighter. Just cut the line off, Tony. And Tony turned around and went, Stacky, I'm Tony Adams. He went, I'm captain of this football club. And I went, I do the talking around here. And I thought, oh my God, I just got told off by the captain in my first session. And I sort of like, it took me back a little bit. And then after the session, Tony pulled me and went, son, he went, I love your talking. He went, it's brilliant. He went, but that's my job. He went, I do that in this back four. And I went, no problem, Tony, absolutely no problem. But I was
understood.
He sort of told me off, but it was nice the fact that he pulled me after and said to me, look, I love your confidence. I love the fact that you want to talk and give information. He went, you know, that's for a young lad to come and do that in their first session. I think that's what sort of blew Tony's mind a little bit. But
I guess he would have done the same, wouldn't he, at that
age? He would have done, yeah, there's no doubt about it, because that's the type of character he is and that's the type of character I am.
Let's move on a little bit to your loan deal out in Beveren, because Arsenal had a link, didn't they, with the Belgian club Beveren at the time. And how was that a learning experience for you over there? What did that do for your career, do you think?
Well, it was an incredible experience, not just on the pitch, but for me it was a huge one off it, because at the time I was in a bit of a crossroads, because I was needing to play games, I was needing to play competitive games, you know, that were going to challenge me and test me, and play in front of larger crowds and playing sort of a more of a competition, if you like. So playing in the Belgian top flight at that age was, you know, was going to be a huge challenge. But also moving away from home and becoming independent in a different culture, a different environment, working with managers and coaches that have got different philosophies and different ways of working, and goalkeeping coaches, and, you know, with lads from different countries, there was so much change. It was a case of, you know, how am I going to sort of handle not just life on the pitch, but life off it. But no, I mean, it was an incredible year for me. Lots of publicity.
I've got to ask you about one incident. I'm sure you know what I'm going to ask you about. against Antwerp, wasn't it, when there was a bit of fan trouble? But I mean, I don't know if people realise this, but you helped, because of that incident, they changed the rules, didn't they, afterwards on crowd trouble over there? And actually, some good came out of that, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it's one of them. It's just one of them incidents that you never plan for. It's very much off the cuff, and it's very much sort of, what, you know, you just deal with it as you see fit, as quickly as possible. Really, it's not something you can prepare for. But it was a derby, if you like, because it was like they're only sort of 10k from us. I've got a notorious sort of following, and they've had obviously issues in the past with their hooligans and stuff like that. And it was just a game we were winning 3-1. I'd been hit by, I couldn't tell you how many objects throughout the game. And when the third goal went in, I decided to sort of lob one or two back, which I probably shouldn't have done, but I did. And it was at the stage that this big steel gate was just getting rattled for fun. And I'm thinking, there's no way they can push that gate through. But there was only this, it was like this elderly gentleman who was a steward at the time. And I'm thinking, blimey, if they do get this gate through, this is not going to do much. And the game was still going on at the time. And then I could just... The gate, there was just a bit of a hush around the stadium, and then I've turned around, and obviously the gate's been opened. But I think naturally, the game was going on, so I felt I didn't want to leave the pitch because obviously the game was still being played, and I was just hoping that they would sort of get off the pitch, or they would go elsewhere, or, you know, stewards would come on and stop it, but it didn't quite work out like that. And ended up being confronted by two fellas, one obviously slightly more intoxicated than the other, but both physically ready to sort of have a punch up, if you like. And it just so happened I've defended myself as best as I could. One of them's ended up on the floor and the other one's ended up sort of backpedaling. So I kind of done as much as I could have done, I suppose, for given the time and the circumstances. But after that, I mean, it was pretty incredible. I mean, I was Jean-Marie Paf, who was in the team in the World Cup. I think it may have been the 86 World Cup. I'm not sure what World Cup it was. But Jean-Marie Paf was in the team of the year for the World Cup, and he had a fly on the wall documentary. And I was invited to his house, and I was on talk shows. I was on Canal Plus, almost like the match of the day. So the publicity really did grow from the back of that. I mean, I got a lot of really positive press. From supporters, fellow supporters, up and down sort of the leagues, from sort of grassroots over there up until the top flight, just saying that was definitely the right thing to have done. And I still stand by that, and I would stand by any goalkeeper that stood and defended himself, because I think it's absolutely wrong that anyone enters a field of play at any time, because it's the wrong thing to do. But I mean, the FA came down quite strong on the team, but they also they said it was, they didn't want me to play in the return leg at Antwerp, obviously, because it was due to obviously the potential trouble that we could get off the back of it. But I also took the stance that no, that would be wrong for me not to do that, because you then almost let them win. I actually was looking forward to the game so much because I knew the atmosphere would be red hot, and I wanted to play in it. So I end up playing the game. I think you may have got beat 1-0 on the day, but Steve Rowley came to the game. But on the back of that, what happened was that there were so many other clubs that realised that I was on loan from Arsenal. I was only sort of 19 at the time, and I was playing in the Belgian top flight, and I was playing week in, week out. So it did grab the attention of a lot of other clubs and a lot of other coaches, which obviously for lots of footballing reasons and ended up being a real positive for myself. But fortunately enough, at the time, it didn't really get back here a great deal. Obviously, Arsenal had contacted me. I spoke to the gaffer. I spoke to Arsene after the incident, and he was basically just wanted to make sure that my well-being and my safety was obviously paramount to him, and I was happy with staying over there, which I was. So, yeah, it was one of the things you look back on, and my kids have seen it now, and my kids think it's great.
Yeah, well, it's, as I say, don't get forgotten when you're out on loan, and you made sure you weren't forgotten when you're in Belgium. So, and then you came back, and then you were promoted into the first team squad for the start of the 03-04 season, with Jens and Stuart Taylor and Rami Shaban. I know Rami and Stuart were injured at the time, weren't they? But there's four of you there. But that must have been a big step for you to move from the youth end of the training ground. For the way it is set up at Arsenal, for those who don't know, you almost move across the building, and it's like a physical promotion as well as one that, you know, just mentally.
Yeah, no, obviously a huge, huge step. But, it, you know, had I not gone to Belgium the previous year and prepared myself for such a jump, you know, there's no doubt the club would have got someone else in who was probably more experienced. So, you know, it was an absolute blessing I went when I did and came back with the experience that I've managed to get. Because I think that the gaffer could trust me more so at that stage than probably he would have done sort of previously if I had not gone out on loan. But I also remember having a very good pre-season, that pre-season when I came back, because I was sort of brimming with confidence. I had a lot more self-belief, believe it or not, which is saying something, but yeah, even more so. And I actually felt as though I was sort of ready to push Romy and Stewie, whereas before I didn't think I was probably in a position to do that because I wasn't as experienced. I probably wasn't as good technically as or tactically as either of them. But I remember coming back that pre-season and I felt in a really good place, and I just felt like I needed to play some games to sort of prove that I was capable of testing sort of the other two, certainly not Jens, but certainly getting closer to where I was. And it just so happens in football, you know, things happen and you get opportunities, and I did get an opportunity, and I was travelling with the first team, as you know, week in, week out, and I was working with Jens. I mean, the biggest responsibility I felt as a number two that season was, you know, wasn't just the likelihood of me potentially coming on and replacing Jens at some stage, or Jens was a bit of a firework. Jens could turn around and chin someone and you could end up playing for three games because, you know, just that's how Jens was. It was like a time bomb. So you'd be sitting on the bench, and every time the ball went near the goal, you'd be panicking because you're thinking, Jens is going to do something. He's going to do something stupid here and I'll be on. So you can never quite relax when you was on the bench, but it was before games, because you've got to remember, we didn't have a goalkeeping coach that travelled to any games. So every home game and every away game that season, it was, you know, the responsibility fell on myself to make sure Jens was ready to perform. And that's, you know, that's not easy. You know, I'm not playing, which I completely understand. And I kind of get on with that job. But my role then took a different turn on the match day. It was now my responsibility to make sure that he was ready to play. And in a good place mentally to perform. So,
and to put that into perspective, just to butt in, but Jens Lehmann, of all the goalkeepers' preparations, was quite, well, as unique, wasn't it? And so if you get that wrong, because he had all sorts of routines that he liked to do and very particular about his warm-up. And I know you got on very well, partly because you knew what he wanted to do before games. And as you say, you were almost like a coach for those warm-ups for him. How did that work out? How did he tell you what he wanted to do?
I knew probably 95% of what his warm-up consisted of, but I'd also know if I got it wrong, he'd let me know. There was no two ways about that. If there was a ball that I slightly sort of miscued or one wasn't quite hard enough, he would definitely let me know, but I didn't mind that because he had standards and he knew what he wanted, and it was down to me to obviously to give that to him. And you know, 9 times out of 10 I'd say that I probably got it spot on for him. And I think the reason we also had a very good relationship is because, and this is me being very honest, Jens always knew and I always knew that I was never going to overtake Jens. I always knew that I wasn't going to play on Saturday if Jens was fit, which was absolutely fine because he was one of the best goalkeepers, if not the best in the league that season. So I was quite content on playing second fiddle, but I also needed to make sure that I was ready to play if I need, you know, I was called upon. And I think sometimes that can make the relationship slightly easier. You know, if you're competing with somebody that is desperate to play and wants you to fail and isn't quite committed to getting you ready and getting you right to play on a Saturday, then I think there will be issues and personalities will conflict, and, you know, each has got their own individual sort of, you know, needs and wants to, you know, on a weekend, and some aren't happy to sit on the bench and some sort of want to go and speak to the manager, and it can cause a bit of friction. And that never happened that season. It was all about the team. It was never about me. It never would have been. It was always about getting Jens right and making sure that he was ready to go and perform. And, you know, looking back on that season, you look back and he didn't make many mistakes, I've got to say.
No, he didn't. No.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We'll move a bit onto that season in a bit, but at the start of that season is when you made your first team debut. As you said, you'd been travelling with the first team for Premier League games. I think you were in the squad for every single Champions League game that season, but it was the League Cup, the Carling Cup as it was then, that was your competition. And your debut, you were 22, is an eventful game. But before we get onto the details, just tell us a bit about how you found out you'll be making your Arsenal first team debut and what emotions you were feeling at the time.
Yeah, I remember sort of the build up to the week. Obviously, it was me and a number of other young lads, you know, David Bentley, Quincy and Sesk, and one or two others, I think Ryan Smith as well, that we were kind of hoping we were going to play. We knew, obviously, at the time that the league was certainly a priority, and we were in a number of cup competitions. So we always thought we'd have a chance. But then I remember getting that we were walking in from training one day, and Arsene just sort of pulled me to one side and said, "Look, you're going to play in the cup. You know, I just wanted to let you know, just to sort of give you the heads up, and so you can plan and prepare as you normally would." And I was like, "Okay, great." So then it sort of like doesn't really sink in. And it's not until you get back in the sort of the change room, you sit down and you start to get nervous straight away. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm actually going to play." But it was good because I think it gave me a bit of time to clear my head, clear my mind, get things sorted out, i.e. let mum and dad know, get tickets sorted out. And then you can actually put your mind on the game rather than rushing around the day before.
Because there is that stress as well of getting, you know, you've got so many, you're an Arsenal man, you've got Arsenal friends and family. How many tickets did you have to sort out?
Well, it's funny because obviously we were still in the pub at the time, and we had three coach loads, like 30 odd seaters that went to the game, all from the pub. All obviously we had T-shirts made up, we had flags. My mum and dad went mad. Yeah, my mum's she's a Paddy and she loves her football and she loves the whole idea of getting the family and friends together for any occasion possible, let alone something like this. So, I'd say there was close on to 100 people that went to the game.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt. Because everyone came back to the pub after. Mm. So, I mean, it was a really special occasion. I must say it was obviously the way it ended was always a bit of a fairy tale, really.
Let's just look at that game then, because it's against Rotherham, wasn't it, at Highbury, of course, in the Carling Cup third round. There was a few debutants, as you said, not least Cesc Fabregas, Gael Clichy also played in that game. But there's some experienced players. Did that help you as well? I mean, Kanu, Wiltord, Edu, they all started. Did that help you? And did anyone take you under their wing?
Definitely. I think just having their presence in the changing room was massive. Just before the game, you could see they just didn't change. Obviously, for them, it was, they played in World Cups and played in, you know, in huge games, in derbies and stuff like that. So they, you know, they could have quite easily have took their foot off the pedal and kind of just sort of, you know, not took it as seriously as probably what we were going to, because obviously it was a step down in competition from probably what they wanted to play in. But not one of them took it lightly. They all prepared properly. They sort of helped us in the range of the change room on a day in the lead up to the game. But you know, when you've got, you know, Sylvain and Kanu and Edu in there and you know, and others, it really does help. Because it's nice to turn around, you know, if you need advice or you needed a bit of help, you know, you knew that you could talk to these players because they were brilliant with the young players. They really were.
And the game itself, do you remember a first save or anything?
Yeah. Well, this is crazy. So it was my obviously first game at Highbury. So I've got new gloves and I thought I'd save them for the game. So you shouldn't wear new gloves straight out of the packet. It's just common knowledge, really, for goalies. You shouldn't do it, especially if it's wet. So I've worn the gloves the previous day and they felt absolutely fine. And then I wore another set of gloves for the warm-up, and then I put the gloves that I prepped the day before for match day. And I remember I remember being out there, and I bring a ball out with me, and I could not. They were like a bar of soap. It was like the gloves. I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? I've put the wrong gloves on. So I actually couldn't hold a thing, and I was a bag of nerves. I was a nervous wreck, thinking if someone's going to have a shot, it's going to go straight through my hands. And I'm thinking, you just to have that negativity was like, I don't know. I think someone's had a shot quite early on, and I've made a pretty decent save, to be fair. And I think I've held it. And I think after that, it just put my mind at rest. But I'd gone out there and I was an absolute bag of nerves. I was panicking, thinking, oh my God, this is all I need. I've got useless gloves on. It's like holding a bar of soap. And someone, it's one from however far out. It's, you know, it's, I'm going to make a boo-boo. But fortunately enough, the first one set on my nerves. I caught it and I came for a cross and I kicked the ball relatively well. And, you know, looking back on the game, which I've done on a number of occasions with my children, it's a little bit grainy, I must say. It's not quite watching HD. but, yeah, we've watched it back in the past. And, yeah, I actually played really well in the game.
Yeah, you're seconds away from a clean sheet.
I know. But you think the dream's over. You think debut, yeah. Clean sheet, played really well. But it just, it's incredible the way it sort of ends. And then Darren Byfield scored a goal. It was a cutback, goes to extra time. And then you're thinking, right, if the biggest thing for me was going through, because I wanted to play another game, because, you know, chances were, if we got knocked out of the cup at that stage, I probably wouldn't play many more games that season unless there was, you know, going to be injury. So I was desperate to perform anyway, but for us to keep winning games so we could sort of, you know, get through as far as we could. And then it obviously went to extra time and sort of stayed. They did have their goalie sent off in extra time, didn't they? Mike Pollock got sent off, and yep. Gary Montgomery went in goal, who I knew from when he was at Coventry beforehand. So, yeah, and then obviously, you know, it goes to penalties. And then I went from sort of that anxious nervousness to excitement, because I'm thinking, right, if I can save a penalty on my debut, that's going to be unbelievable. Like, that'll live with me forever. You know, sort of now, regardless if we win or lose, I've got to save a penalty at Highbury on my debut. I have to do that. And then, obviously, it went on. I saved one. So I was like, well, I'm over the moon with that. And then, it kept going because I kept scoring. We kept scoring. And you look back at the penalties, and there weren't many bad penalties, to be fair. I mean, the one I saved was a poor penalty. But actually, the ones that go in, you start to question, you know, what am I doing wrong here? Because, obviously, we all know what the score finished. It was sort of getting out of hand. I thought, I've got to save another one here. And then I remember, and they were pointing at me to take one. And I'm thinking, what? Because I think someone must have gone off, or someone couldn't take one in extra time, or when it came to penalties. So obviously they were calling me forward to then take one. So now I'm sort of stepping up to the ball, and you're thinking, blimey, I could score, save one, and go through. It's going to be a dream. So obviously I've ended up scoring one as well. Took a very good penalty and stuck it in the side netting. And then Sylvan ended up, I think they scored the next one, and Sylvan scored. So we went through 9-8 winners on penalties, and it's not really until you look back at that and you think, blimey, you just couldn't have put a better script together if you tried.
That is incredible. That is the only penalty shootout ever at Highbury as well. I've just got it in front of me. It was 9-8 to Arsenal after whatever 11 penalties each, I think.
And you
scored one, and then that's when you saved one as well just after that. So you must have had the adrenaline running just after you scored it. Just sum up those emotions then, that the final whistle.
I just, you know, you just never get that back. You know, then, you know, what you experience on a day like that, I think you could chase that for 20 years in football and never quite, you know, replicate that evening. You know, other players have been very fortunate to played in, you know, Champions League finals and win, you know, win massive games like that. And, you know, they'll never get that back. But for me, it was on a it was on a smaller scale. You know, it was in the Carling Cup. Yeah, it was at Highbury, which is a very special place to me, and a number of Arsenal fans. But for it to finish the way it did was something that, you know, you look back on in your career and think, blimey, that was something very, very special. And that's what being a footballer was all about for me. That was the dream. You know, experiencing nights like that was, you know, were very, very special.
And it stood you in good stead because, as you said, you stayed in the first team squad for the league games, and famously you're on the bench for the title clincher at White Hart Lane. So just to be in and around the team that day must have been, well, what a day in the history of the club. What are your memories of that day?
Yeah, so I remember the drive in. I mean, the week, the build-up to the game stayed pretty much, you know, the same. one thing with the gaffer, he wanted a constant and he wanted some consistency. It wasn't going to change just because it was going to be a white hart lane and it was going to be a title decider. It was just we tried to keep everything pretty much the same. But I mean, I remember the drive in, and I remember objects getting thrown at the bus and windows being smashed at the back. I remember there being loads of police surveillance on top of buildings and stuff like that on the way in. So it was, I mean, the atmosphere was, it was brewing, and it was, you know, it was ready to sort of go off at any stage. But with a group like the one we had, they sort of thrived off that. That was like, you know, that's what gets them up for games. Not that they need to get up for games, but putting them into a cauldron like that is something that they really did thrive off. And I just remember getting to the stadium and obviously the game sort of playing itself out, really. But I just remember, you know, the Arsenal fans up in the corner, singing, shouting, dancing. It was unbelievable. I mean, there was beers in the changing room and there was pictures being taken up. I can't imagine if we had had picture phones back then. I mean, people, you look now and it, you know, there's a selfie and there's a picture after, you know, after a group win, you know, from some players, you know, they go to Spartak Moscow, they win a group game and they take pictures. I mean, we've gone to White Hart Lane and won the title, and I'll be honest with you, I've got about 10 pictures from the day that Stuart had taken at the time. So, but you don't need the pictures. I mean, it's lovely to look back on stuff, but you've got the memories and they'll never be taken away. And then after that, I remember we had the PFA Awards that evening in central London. And obviously we were slightly late and we went, there was a number of first team lads that went. And I just remember going back to the training ground, putting our suit on, and we were all sort of jumped in taxis to get up to the PFA Awards at the time. And I remember we were running slightly late. I mean, listen, I'm in cloud nine here. We've just won the title White Hart Lane, you know, dressed up to the nines. I'm walking in with Thierry Henry, Ashley Cole, and Patrick Vieira and whoever else. And I'm thinking, blimey, this is like, to be in this environment, to be in this crowd, to be, you know, in this company is very, very special, and probably at the time not something I probably realised until sort of later on, really, that you're actually, you know, you're teammates and you're becoming quite close to these world superstars. And I remember we walked in and everyone was sitting down when we walked in, and then next minute every single person stood on their feet and gave us a round of applause when we walked in. And that sort of like makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck when you talk about it. Everything stopped for us because of what we had just done and what we had achieved. And I think that was a real nice way to sort of cap the day off, you know, just to get that recognition, certainly not so much for me, but for the players to be recognised as, you know, as legends and as stars on the day, which I think they, you know, very much deserved.
Were you sitting on the bench, though, thinking, because you mentioned earlier that Jens could go at any minute, could get sent off or, you know, could get injured or whatever. Was there part of you saying, I want to come on? Or were you thinking, I don't want to because I could be the one responsible for losing this unbeaten run?
Definitely crossed my mind. I remember warming up twice. And Jens was, he was having an issue, I think, early on up at Anfield. And he had signalled to the bench. And I'm thinking, oh my God, here we go. It was about 10, 15 minutes in. I think Gary said, look, Stacky, you better go and keep yourself warm. I'm thinking, oh no, here we go. I'm going to have to come on here. What about if I make a ricket? And I thought, no, you know, no, it's not. What about if I have a weldie? What about if we win the game and have a blinder? You have to try and be sort of, you have to set your mindset really positively, because if you don't, then the chances are you will go on and you will make a ricket. So, but I always knew with Jens, he's a German, isn't he? He wants to play in the big games. He wants to play every game. And it would take a hell of a lot for him not to have played. And it's funny because he never came off in any game that year. He was fit for every league game. And at the end of the season, Martin Keown had a testimonial at Highbury against an England 11. And what did Jens do? He done his hamstring in the warm-up. So I've waited a whole season to play for Arsenal in the Premier League, and he's never come off and he's never missed a game. So we're playing in Martin Keown's testimonial, and Jens comes in halfway through the warm-up and says, I can't play, I've done my hamstring. And I thought, what? You can't do that. You can't let me play in the testimonials and you play in the league game. That's not fair.
Have you spoken to many of your Well, you kept in touch with many of the players from the Arsenal youth days, and I was just wondering if they've had this because they're all, you know, all of a similar age, coming to the time when your playing career comes to an end. It's a really difficult thing for a player to mentally adapt to, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. It can be tough. It does throw up some challenges, I've got to say. I speak to Jay Boffroyd, and I speak to Steve Sidwell, I speak to Ben Chorley, Halsey, David Noble. I mean, I do speak to pretty much, we've got a WhatsApp group and stuff like that, so we do stay in touch, but everyone goes in their own, you know, some have got their own fencing company, some are cab drivers. So yeah, we've all sort of gone in different directions, but all doing okay. Well, yeah, in that regard, we're all doing pretty well with our life outside of football and after football. To be honest, everyone's got families now, and you tend to find something to get into, and you know, and to sort of get on with. So yeah, I must say it does throw up some challenges, and I think you've got to be mentally tough. You've got to have a good network around you, good support, good family, understanding family, because it can take, you know, it can take a bit of time to make that adjustment.
So did you start to think about retirement? Were you doing your coaching badges? Had you always wanted to go into coaching?
Well, I was always planning. I mean, I started doing my coaching badges when I was up in Scotland, sort of when I was in my mid-20s. And I always felt I had quite a lot of time on my hand, because socially I had a lot of friends here. And you know, while I was in Scotland, I wanted to try and find something that I was going to sort of give me a little bit of focus and drive, rather than just sort of wasting time, which I'd done before for too many years. So I started, obviously, my development as a coach, and took that really seriously. And eventually, when I left Hibs, I sort of came back down, and you know, I had my goalkeeping A licence and my UEFA B. And I've obviously since gone on to do my youth modules, and I've done a degree, and I've also got my outfield A licence as well. So I've tried to continue that learning, really. It's been a bit of a pattern for me over the years. Try and stay engaged outside of football, because I've not been the best when I've had spare time, to be honest. So I've tried to find something that's going to sort of keep me engaged and keep learning. So I think the biggest thing for me was just to plan and to complete as many courses as I possibly could, because when opportunities would arise, I needed to make sure I was ready.
Thanks a lot for your time today, Graham. That was great. And we look forward to seeing you back at Emirates Stadium soon. At home, if you're enjoying these, remember that you can leave a review and a rating at iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. And subscribe to make sure you don't miss any episodes. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.